This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Plenty to do still in the next hour coming up. We'll get to Deshaun Watson and the latest there. HBO Real Sports did a sit-down interview with a couple of his accusers on Tuesday. And then also Roger Goodell spoke out about the investigation on Deshaun. So we'll get to all that coming up a little bit later on, play some of the audio from one of his accusers, from his coach, from the commissioner in the NFL. We'll do that in just a little bit. Plus, I've been teasing this all afternoon. We'll get to this as well. Sam Darnold and Trevor Lawrence, to me, are very similar. I think they're in the same position. Justin Fields, however, is in the opposite position. I'll explain what I mean in a little bit as well. And we'll also get to the worst fan bases in sports. Somebody put out a list, and this list is a little personal to the Morrow Midday Show. I'll explain why in just a few moments. If you ever miss anything from the show, we always podcast the shows in full. You can always find them on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. However, you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. While you're there, you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or you can even leave a comment for the show right there at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on the show page and leave a comment for the show there. You can get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Also, you can always text the show, 843-608-1734, or you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. I'm on the road and have been. We did not do a show yesterday. I've been up here in Greenville the last couple of days, and we'll be here the next couple of days. Nice little getaway for a holiday weekend. I always like the Greenville area, and whenever I come up here, I always make sure to stop off at some of the same spots. We stay in the same area here. We're in the downtown area, so it's very nice. And I look forward to there's a great chocolate store down the road that I always go to. And I think it's a chain. I think it's a well-known place. But there's one right – oh, my goodness. My sweet tooth drives me there every time. And I get some great coconut chocolates over there. They got a nice burger place down the road. So anyways, that's what I'll be doing the rest of the day. I'm going to go get a fat burger and some chocolate and then sit on the couch in my socks the rest of the day and watch whatever's on TV. Don't worry. We got the premium channels here. We're living large in Greenville, let me tell you. Miami Heat last night, as the Citadel baseball team was unfortunately letting one slip away in the Southern Conference Tournament. They'll play tomorrow night in the next round. The Heat were playing the Celtics, and I opened the show talking about this game and this series as the Heat lost last night at home, and now the Celtics have a chance to close out the series at home in Game 6. Real quick, the two comparisons I made this morning, because then I want to get to this top 10 list of worst sports fans. But when it comes to the Miami Heat, the two connections I made when thinking about the Heat, two things. Number one, I would compare them to the Patriots or any team organization like that in the sense that for Miami, it's about the leaders of the organization. Miami has been to a bunch of Eastern Conference Finals the last 15 years. They won a championship with Dwayne Wade and Shaq. Then they won another one a few years later, a couple with LeBron and Wade. And then they got at least back to the championship now with Jimmy Butler in the bubble 2 years ago and back to the conference finals this year. Point being, there's been a lot of different chapters in the book of the Miami Heat over the past 15 to 20 years. But the one constant has been Pat Riley. Not even Spoelstra, right? It was Stan Van Gundy back in the day leading the way. Spoelstra came aboard and was, you know, winning with the big three. But Pat Riley's been involved with the Miami Heat for a long time. And I think he deserves the credit for the accomplishments of the Heat. And we always hear, and it's almost a cliche, but you hear about the Heat culture that stems from Pat Riley. And he did it in L.A., and he did it in New York, and he's been doing it in Miami. People just haven't been paying attention. And so the reason why I compare them to, say, a Patriots, or maybe your company, right, a company that is well-operated, is that when you have smart people at the very top, when you have really talented people at the top, you don't need as talented people down below. And then it's the vice versa. It's like a pyramid, right? If the top of the company isn't very talented, you ever have a boss and you think like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. If that's the case, you require more of the employees. The boss makes it harder on you. We've all worked for a boss. We've worked for a boss on both sides, I'm sure. Now, maybe you've only been at one company, or maybe there hasn't been a lot of change in your career or the places you worked. But for a lot of people, if you've been in your business a long time, you've probably worked for a boss who you thought, wow, this guy's really sharp. He knows what he's doing. And you've also probably worked for a boss, or maybe you had a manager where you realize, like, oh, you know what? The opposite. This guy really doesn't know what he's doing. This is ridiculous. And when you have a guy that doesn't know what he's doing, makes your job a lot more difficult, makes it more stressful, makes it harder. You need more talented employees when the upper management isn't as good. Vice versa. When upper management's really good, you can get by with less qualified, less talented employees because they're going to get the most out of you. Bill Belichick gets the most out of his rosters, out of his assistant coaches. Great quarterbacks get the most out of their supporting cast. And when you take those pieces away from the quarterback, from the coach, from a Pat Riley, they don't look so good elsewhere. Because it's not so much about the player, it's more about the organization they're with. And that's from the top down. Bill Belichick makes his assistants look really good. And then they go off and be head coaches elsewhere, and they look really bad. Because it's not about the person, it's about the program. It's about the company, it's about the organization. In this case, it's about working under Bill Belichick. It's about catching balls from Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Favre or Rodgers. The receiver looks really good in Green Bay catching footballs from Brett Favre. Then you put him in Oakland, a little bit different. Realize, oh, actually, it wasn't so much about the guy as it was the organization, as it was the fact that he's catching footballs from one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. And so the Miami Heat, same idea. Pat Riley has squeezed a lot out of the fruits. Right, he squeezed a lot of juice out of these fruits over the years. But there's only so much juice available. Miami got to the finals 2 years ago, didn't have enough to get over the hump. This year, looks like unable to get past the conference finals. And you look at this Heat team in the last couple of games, and you realize, look, they had a really good year. I don't want to take away anything from Miami. But there's obviously not enough there. And I've received text messages throughout the playoffs from friends who are, you know, kind of casual basketball fans. They tune in for the playoffs, and they're wondering, how do the Heat even get here? And I get it. You know, they haven't looked great at times, especially in this series. But during the regular season, they did look like one of the best teams. Like, they had the best record in the East. They were the best team in the East over the course of an 82-game season. That's nothing to sneeze at. But it's more about what Pat Riley does and even Spoelstra and the culture that they've built there, that you can plug in some pieces and they're going to look better playing in those roles. They're going to overachieve a little bit. Anytime somebody overachieves, it's kind of a credit to those above them, right? When a football team overachieves because the coach got the most out of them, or the GM did a little bargain shopping, right? He found the real bargain, somebody that a diamond in the rough, an undrafted guy that nobody thought much of, and he came in and played a big role for you. It's from the upper management. We give them the credit. Maybe we should give the players the credit because they're actually better than we thought, but it's really more about the coach, the GM, finding these guys, developing these guys, putting them in the position to succeed. They're the ones we give the credit to. Pat Riley is the one that should be getting the credit for the job he's done in Miami, getting the most out of this team. The other comparison I would make would be to the Dallas Mavericks, because when we got down to the Final Four, we looked at these four teams and we said the Mavericks may have the best player in Luka Doncic, but they don't have enough pieces. And when I look at Miami, I think I put Miami in the same boat. We've now referenced the Joel Embiid tweet a couple of times throughout the afternoon where he said, man, the Heat need a second star. And he's absolutely right. The Mavericks need a second star. Right now, the Mavericks don't have as good of a supporting cast, so more is on the shoulders of Luka, but he's also more talented offensively. Jimmy Butler has a better supporting cast, still not good enough, but he's not as good offensively as Luka Doncic. So when I look at the Heat, right, they're kind of like the Mavericks. We just didn't really realize. And when Jimmy Butler went down with this knee issue, I mean, I know he's still playing, but he's far from 100%. He was airballing shots last night. He looked terrible last night. He has not been good for the last three games ever since the knee issue. And when you don't have Jimmy Butler trying to go for 40 points like he did, you know, in game one, and you got to rely on some of these other guys, they're not up to the task. That's kind of like Dallas. If Luka has an off night, the Mavericks are screwed because they don't have the talent around them where guys can step up and make enough plays. The Heat are in a similar boat. Jimmy Butler's just not quite as big of an offensive star as Luka, but his supporting cast also isn't good enough. You're reliant too much on your one main guy, and that's not how you win a championship. You look at the Celtics, to me, and I probably sound like a Jason Tatum hater because I keep, you know, putting him down throughout the playoffs, Jaylen Brown, to me, has been the most impressive part of the Celtics. And when you get that other guy step up, last hour we were talking, Trent was talking about Robert Williams and his defensive impact, right? You get these other guys, making big plays, giving you big minutes. Al Horford had a huge night earlier in the playoffs. Right, that's what it takes to be a championship team. The Warriors have the same thing. The Celtics and the Warriors do that. That's why they're going to meet up in the championship. When Klay Thompson isn't playing well, Jordan Poole will step up. Wiggins makes big plays. Looney had a couple of big games. Curry is pretty consistent, but even if he's having a slow half, somebody else will make the plays. For the Heat, you just haven't had enough of that. You've been too reliant on Butler. The Mavericks have been too reliant on Luka Doncic. For the Celtics, Tatum hasn't been great for a lot of the postseason. That's okay. Other guys have. For the Warriors, Steph Curry, really, I mean, if you go look at the numbers, if you've been watching the games, I know he's one of the best players in the league. He's the greatest shooter we've ever seen. He hasn't been great in the postseason, nor has Klay Thompson. That's okay. Other guys are stepping up, filling those voids. That's what it takes. It's a cliche, but it's true. Cliches are cliches because they're true. That's why we say them all the time, and they become cliches, because there's some truth to them. For a championship team, right, you need guys to step up. That's what we always say. Championship team, you need guys to step up, fill a role. You need the role players, have a big night, yada, yada, yada. The same things we always say, but it's true. And the Heat have not gotten that these last few games. Some of these guys have been horrendous. I mean, Lowry and Strus combined last night to go like 0 of 17, something like that. They didn't make a shot. Some of these guys have been terrible for Miami. Dallas, some of their guys. It was a couple of games ago where two of their stars combined to go 0 of 15. You can't have that. The Celtics and the Warriors, other guys have stepped up. That's why that's going to be the championship matchup, or at least a big reason why that will be our championship matchup this year. Now, when it comes to the Miami Heat, I have to get to this story. Mike Freeman has covered sports. He's been a sports writer for a long time. He put out a list for USA Today. And this is one of those like evergreen topics. You could talk about this all the time. People put out their lists. It's just opinion. Everybody has a different opinion. But he put out his list of the 10 worst fan bases in sports. And there's a reason why we need to touch on this list from Mike Freeman. Now, first off, you can find the full list at usatoday.com. He put the list together for USA Today. I do not like the very opening sentence of this article. It says it's difficult to categorize the worst fan bases. It's like ranking David Spade movies. Whoa. Why the shot? I love David Spade.
Whoa, whoa,
I heard
whoa.
His new stand-up special was not very good on Netflix. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. But I've always loved David Spade. That seems like maybe it's just me misunderstanding. I feel like he's taking a shot with David Spade with that line. I mean, come on. Now, maybe it was more about Chris Farley, but, Black Sheep and Tommy Boy were essentially the same movies. Those were classics in the 90s. What was it? Dickie Roberts was the other one? Underrated film. Big David Spade fan. Love David Spade. Even if he's usually riding the coattails of Adam Sandler. We do not need to slander David Spade and his filmography. But as we get to the list of the 10 worst fan bases, number 10, Philadelphia Eagles. We can obviously understand why. There are many stories of, throwing batteries at Santa and just the terrible thing. They used to have a jail at the bottom of the link or at Veterans Stadium. Number 9, Notre Dame. These are the worst football fans. Number 8, University of Texas. Number 7, the Golden State Warriors. The 6, St. Louis Cardinals. 5, the Red Sox. 4, the Celtics. 3, the Patriots. So you hit all the Boston sports fans, 3, 4, and 5. Then we get to the top 2. Worst sports fan bases around. Number 2, the Cowboys. And number 1, Mike Freeman says the worst fan base in all of sports is the Miami Heat. The reasons why, as he says, these fans have the honor of owning one of the most unintentionally hilarious moments in fan history. And he references when Ray Allen made the three in the finals back in 2013. The fans had already left the building, assuming it was over, and then wanted to try to get back in because the game was going to overtime. That's the main reason why for the Heat. And he ranks the Heat as the worst fans. Now, why we have to bring this up and touch on this is because, of course, we have a Miami Heat fan working on the show. So, Trent, when you hear Mike Freeman say that no sports fans are worse than Miami Heat fans, what do you think of that claim?
You know, it's very interesting, Luke. I don't know if this gentleman has ever been to a football game in Athens, Georgia, but we could debate that all day long. No, I think there's been, interesting about Miami fans because there's a lot of celebrities, a lot of people visiting Miami will go sit courtside and everything. Those are the fans that you see. And I disagree with this wholeheartedly. I know many Miami Heat fans down in the South Florida area. They watch every single game. If they get tickets, they go. They're loud. Yes, sometimes they don't show up till the, you know, late first quarter, early second quarter. I understand that. It's kind of the curse of the Miami Heat. I get it. But there are so many awesome fans of the Miami Heat. I disagree with this wholeheartedly. I'd put the Philly fans up there probably in the top five. Why would I just don't understand this list, Luke. I'm very offended that the Miami Heat are the worst fan base in sports because I disagree with that wholeheartedly, Luke. Disagree.
Yeah. I figured you would. I figured you would be not only offended but disagree.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I was shocked to see the Heat number one. I don't think I would ever consider the Heat. Like, if I put together a list, I don't think Heat fans would ever cross my mind. Now, in your explanation, it sounded like you took a shot at Georgia fans. Are you saying Georgia fans are some of the worst?
Well, Luke, you know, obviously I got the Florida Gator lineage, so that has to do with it. I just really have a problem with a grown man or woman barking in my face. I've always had a massive problem with that. I don't know if everybody else is okay with that, but I've always had a big problem. I used to go to the Florida Georgia games down in Jacksonville almost every year as a kid. And they, yeah, I have a major problem with Georgia football fans. Sorry to anybody that's a Georgia football fan, but, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes.
If I had to ask you for, like, a top three or maybe just you have a clear number one worst sports fans, would it be Georgia? Like, what would your top three look like when you think of the worst fans in all of sports, college, professional, any sport? What fan bases would you say?
Georgia would have – I won't do any specific order. Georgia would have to be in that conversation. The Dallas Cowboys would have to be in that conversation. And any Philly – actually, you know, well, Boston's won so much that they kind of deserve to be the way that they are. We all know that it's a championship-winning season. So I'd probably put Philly fans up there as well. Any Philadelphia sport fan I'd put in that top three.
Yeah, that's fair. I was thinking about this. I think to be a bad fan, there are three things. And this is what Mike Freeman alluded to in the beginning of his article before he got to his list. We would have to narrow it down to what exactly you're talking about when you say the worst fans, or it could be kind of all-encompassing. Either you're not good supporters, right? They're bad fans in the sense that they don't support their team, they show up late or leave early, or they're just uninterested. But that's not usually what we're talking about when we say the worst fan bases. Number two would be front runners. There's plenty of those. I think that's part of the issue with the Heat was that when you had LeBron James, right, suddenly there were a lot more Heat fans around. That always ticks people off when you don't seemingly go through the struggles that all other sports fans do, and you just come around or you jump on the bandwagon when the team's good. And then the third box when you talk bad sports fans are kind of just, I guess, bad people. And that's what we always think of when it comes to Philadelphia. Well, when you hear the stories, now Philadelphia fans will always defend themselves and say that they're just urban legends. They're not true about, you know, booing Santa or throwing batteries and doing this and that and all the crazy stories. They used to have a jail in the stadium or holding cell in the stadiums. But those are kind of the three areas. Either they're truly just bad fans in the sense that they don't support their team, or they're front runners, which isn't what a fan is all about, or they're just, you know, bad people that do bad things to athletes or visiting fans or whatever. You want nothing to do with those stadiums or those people. When I think of the worst fan bases, yeah, I was surprised to see the Cowboys number two on this list behind Miami. I think most people would probably say the Cowboys, and the Cowboys check that box of being overly obnoxious. They're not front runners, but they're obnoxious to the point that, and some of my best friends are Cowboys fans, so unfortunately I have to deal with it all the time. But, I mean, if you call yourself America's team, I mean, come on, that's enough said. The idea that no matter what situation the team's in, they believe they have Super Bowl aspirations every year. They believe they're one of the top teams in the league every year. It's nauseating. I would also say, I would probably say Patriots fans. I'm trying to think, off the top of my head, worst fans. I would go Cowboys. Yankee fans, because they're in the same category as the Cowboys. And then I'd probably say Patriots as well would be my top three of worst fan bases.
Mm.
Going back to Mike Freeman's list, surprised he has Philadelphia Eagles at only number 10. They would probably be towards the tops of most. Notre Dame's another one that I would say. They're 9 on his list. And you could see what I consider when I think of bad sports fans. Because I would say Notre Dame, the Yankees, and the Cowboys are all in the same group, where their fan bases, no matter what's going on, they always believe they're the best team. in the country or in the league, and they're going to win the championship, and everybody should just focus on them, and they're better than everybody else. It doesn't matter that the Cowboys, you know, just went 4-12. Doesn't matter. They're going to win the Super Bowl next year, and they have the great stars, and they're America's team, and yada, yada, yada. There's no knocking those fans down from the pedestal. That's the issue. It's obnoxious. Number 8 on this list is Texas. 7 is the Golden State Warriors. I can understand the Warriors because they certainly are seen as, you know, like front runners at this point because of Steph Curry. Where were these fans before Steph Curry? And now they've become obnoxious with all their success. The Cardinals, number 6. I get the Cardinals, right? What's the cliche about, oh, they're the smartest baseball fans around? The idea is almost like Cardinals fans feel like they invented baseball. So I do get the idea that I've never had bad experiences with Cardinals fans. I think it's different. They're not as obnoxious, but they're a little elitist, Cardinals fans, or at least that's the perception. Then you have the Red Sox, Celtics, Patriots are 5-4-3 on this list. I've had bad experiences with Patriots fans. I'm not a Patriot fan. Everybody assumes I am when I tell them where I grew up. I'm not a Patriots fan, and I've had a lot of bad experiences. I've gone to games when the Vikings played the Patriots, and I've gone in my Brett Favre jersey and have been harassed throughout. I remember when they cheered when Brett Favre had got taken off on a stretcher that game with the Vikings-Patriots, and that's when I lost all respect. You want to give a guy a hard time, that's fine. Never cheer for an injury. That was a low blow. They were very excited when Favre got injured, and they had to bring out an ambulance onto the field. Did not like that. Red Sox fans, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I'm biased. But I could certainly see that after 86 years of not winning and now winning some championships, why Red Sox fans are seen as being very obnoxious. It's kind of that whole idea of, like, new money, right? Like, where were you for the last 90 years? You guys were terrible. You were the laughingstock. You would always choke. We'd make fun of you. And now you're very obnoxious. But Red Sox fans, you're waiting for that opportunity to finally have a chance to hold your team over others. And then the Cowboys, again, number 2, and the Heat, number 1. The Cowboys, yeah, absolutely. They fit my criteria with Notre Dame and with Yankee fans of no matter the situation, they always believe they're the best, and that's just annoying to any other sports fan. Mike Freeman's list for USA Today. I was shocked to see the Miami Heat. I don't think they're normally ranked number 1, but Freeman thinks they're the worst fans in all of sports, and I'm proud to say we have one on the Morrow Midday Show.
It's disrespectful, Luke. It's just disrespectful to a franchise that has won many a championships. It's been a staple of Miami. Nobody cares about the Dolphins anymore. If you live in Miami, you are a Miami Heat basketball fan. You watch the games. That's what it's about, Luke.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Number 1 on Mike Freeman's list. When we come back, more serious issues. Deshaun Watson. Tuesday night, HBO Real Sports, they do an episode a week, and they did theirs this week, at least part of it, focusing on Deshaun Watson. They talked to some of his accusers. We'll have some of that audio for you when we come back. Some more information in regards to Deshaun in these situations, and also Roger Goodell also spoke about the Deshaun situation. So we'll get to all that when we come back. The latest with Deshaun Watson. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show. On ESPN Radio. I'm happy, some I say. Oh, we gotta let the music play.
What the people need is a way to make them smile. It ain't so hard to do if you know how. Gotta get a message, get it all through. Lord, now mama got you happy why. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get to the Deshaun Watson situation here in a moment. As this past week, Tuesday night on HBO's Real Sports, they touched on the Deshaun Watson story and interviewed a couple of the accusers of Deshaun Watson. Now, full transparency, because we're always transparent here, I actually know the PR guy for HBO's Real Sports. We were trying to get somebody on the Morrow Midday Show this week to talk about it. But with the schedule, right, wasn't on the air yesterday, didn't know if I would be on the air today until last night because of the baseball tournament, didn't know about Friday, or I didn't really know a lot of these things, what the schedule, the Morrow Midday Show was up in the air this week because of the Southern Conference baseball tournament. Point being, a little bit difficult to try to book somebody who may have a little bit of a busy schedule when we can't really guarantee when we'll even be on or what time would work. So, anyways, with that said, HBO Real Sports did a sit-down on Tuesday night with a couple of Deshaun's accusers. Now, one of them, you may know the name, it's Ashley Solis, who has been the most vocal. She was the first one to come out publicly and talk publicly to the media about her experience with Deshaun Watson. Here was a clip from Tuesday night and what Ashley had to say on the HBO Real Sports.
He ends up exposing himself, and I hurried up and covered him with the towel, and he said, "Oh, you don't have to worry about the towel." I said, "Yes, I do."
So then what happened?
He requested that I work on his abdomen. But the moment I went above his navel, he told me he didn't want me to work there. He wanted me to work lower. He just kept directing me to go lower and don't be scared. You can go in there. And I just started really freezing up at this point.
Can you explain that?
Like a wave just took over my body. I felt so hot. I was sweating. It was getting more and more clear that this is not what I signed up for. This is not what I thought the session was going to be.
That was Ashley Solis Tuesday night as part of the HBO's Real Sports talking about the Deshaun Watson situation. Now, here was Kevin Stefanski, head coach of the Browns, Deshaun's new coach, asked about the Deshaun Watson situation and the latest there.
We've done a lot of work on Deshaun, the person. And there's legal proceedings ongoing. There's an investigation ongoing. So I won't comment much further than that.
That's pretty much it, right? We've done a lot of work on Deshaun Watson. That's what you get from Stefanski. Can't talk about it. Legal situation, so on and so forth. Here's the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, was asked about the latest with Deshaun. Here's what Goodell had to say.
Roger, could you give us an update on where the Deshaun Watson investigation stands and perhaps a timeline for when we may get a resolution?
Sorry to disappoint you, but I can't give you a timeline because I think that process will go forward. I think we're nearing the end of the investigative period, and then at some point, as you know, this will be handled by our disciplinary officer, and that will happen hopefully shortly, and then we'll see where that comes out.
Yeah, hopefully shortly. Seems like, as he said, nearing the end of the investigation, hopefully we'll get some clarity for really everyone's sake about what to expect from the NFL standpoint with Deshaun this upcoming year. Now, it should be noted that as Goodell said there towards the end of the clip, right, he made sure to acknowledge he's not the one making the call. We always blame Goodell for all these things, and, oh, he did a terrible job of handling this, handling that. They have hired it's a female making the decision, and I wish I had her name in front of me. But she's a former judge, and she's the one that will be making the call. And this is what the NFL has done over the years, because when the Ray Rice situation occurred, that did fall on the desk of Roger Goodell. The NFL was not prepared for such a situation. And Goodell originally suspended Ray Rice, I think it was, what, originally 2 games? Something like that, something minor. And then the video came out. And that's what really ticked people off. And thought, wow, like you only gave him a 2-game suspension for this? When you could see the video of him punching out his, I think, fiance at the time. And then that's when Ray Rice, well, he never played again in the NFL. And that set the bar for the NFL when Goodell realized, like, oh, we need to be better prepared. We need to have a better, almost like a support staff here to handle this type of stuff. We have to go hire some people that know what they're doing. And they have done so. And they have people that have worked in the special crimes unit that have dealt with, sexual crimes. They have had people that have come from the legal world that don't have a football background. Because, of course, Goodell is not qualified to really handle situations as complex or as serious as this. He's a commissioner. He was a former lawyer. Not necessarily should be one investigating something like this. So I always want to make that point because people always assume, and when they make the announcement eventually about Deshaun Watson, people will do it again, and they say, oh, what is Goodell doing? Yada, yada. But he's really taken it out of his hands. And it's somebody else who's more qualified that's leading the way for the NFL, which is something that Goodell has done that it's a good thing for the league. Because of that Ray Rice situation. But with all of that said, when it comes to Deshaun Watson, maybe you watched the Real Sports on HBO the other night. I was traveling. I didn't see it. I've just seen some clips that they put out, like the one we just played moments ago. Deshaun Watson's lawyer also came out and said, and kind of reiterated, we already knew this, but reiterated that Deshaun had consensual sex with 3 of the massage therapists. Now, look, I don't know the details of Deshaun's relationship. He has been in a relationship for a long time. He is still in the relationship with the same woman as he was before all this information came out. You could go back to like the Will Smith situation, right, where the idea is that him and his wife have an open relationship, or at least on one side. I don't know if Will likes the idea, but an open relationship. I have no idea what Deshaun has going on in his personal life. I don't know. But his lawyer is the one saying he's had consent, right? So he's gone out to get a massage, and at least on three separate occasions, three different people, it has led to sex with the massage therapist. So now to bring it back to the situation at hand here. Look, innocent until proven guilty, and really now the conversation is more about what the NFL is going to do. We have already gone past the legal stuff, and now we're focused on, is he going to be punished by the NFL? He's not going to be punished by, you know, by the law. Is he going to be punished by the NFL? We'll never probably know exactly what transpired, but the question would be, with that admission from Rusty Hart and Deshaun's lawyer, would it be, what would be more far-fetched, or what would be, you know, most likely that Deshaun, knowing that information, went too far on a couple of other occasions, thinking it could lead to a similar experience, or that 23 women got together knowing that Deshaun is one to try to hook up with his massage therapist, and these women all got together to come up with similar stories to try to get something out of him, right? What seems more likely? That Deshaun had that experience with three women and therefore maybe assumed that it could happen with other massage therapists as well. And, of course, remember that he went to a number of different massage therapists over a small period of time, which has always been a big red flag to me. I try to go to the same barber. I'm a creature of habit. I even will go to the same grocery store. When I get pizza, I usually get it from the same spot. If I'm getting a massage, I would probably be going to the same person, especially if I'm a professional athlete, and it's an important part of the job, and I like the person that's doing the work. I don't think I'm going to 40 different masseuses over a two-year period. But what would be seen more far-fetched? Deshaun kind of going too far or forgetting or losing sight of what that line is that he's crossing, or 23 separate women who are also massage therapists all happen to get together with this ploy, coming up with the stories, knowing Deshaun's background of having these sexual relationships with a couple of the masseuses or massage therapists. Now, when it comes to the NFL, still waiting on some sort of issue with the or some sort of determination with the NFL. The women said Tuesday night that it really hurt them to see Deshaun get that huge contract with the Browns. And when he signed that contract, again, innocent until proven guilty, and we have no idea what truly happened. And that's why this situation is so hard, because you don't know which side to believe, you don't know how to react, what you should do, who should be punished in this. We don't know who really is at fault, who's telling the truth. As they say, there's always three sides to every story. Right? In this case, there'd be Deshaun, there'd be the women, and then probably the truth maybe somewhere in between. Who knows? But the problem is that before we got that clarity, Deshaun signed the largest contract in NFL history with this looming overhead. And there was just always something that seemed wrong about that from the Cleveland Browns. We've had reports from other NFL owners, right, who are really ticked off with the Browns doing that, and kind of the smugness that has come from it from the Browns, or even maybe how Deshaun has carried himself in Cleveland. And the fact that they altered the contract so that if Deshaun is suspended this year, it's going to cost him very little money, and he'll still get that big payday. And when it comes to the women and the theory of, you know, they're just doing this to try to get money, could be. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what truly transpired between Deshaun and these massage therapists. But it could also be that Deshaun isn't going to be punished by the law. Let's assume, right, in a world where this actually did happen and these women actually did go through this, and that's something that will alter you, right? It will take therapy. It'll take time to try to get over it. Some people may never get over something like that. It could be very traumatizing. And for these women to go through something like that and then see no punishment from the legal system, we'll see, still no punishment yet from the employer, the NFL, and certainly no punishment from the actual team employing Deshaun Watson, because all he got was the biggest upgrade, right, the biggest contract you could ever get after a situation like this. I can understand why, if this is all true, if what these women are saying is correct, I can understand why they would be sitting at home watching that and feel sick to their stomachs, and why they would be going after Deshaun where it's perceived, they're just after his money, but maybe that's because that's the only way you can punish him at this point. But I would also say, after this contract with the Browns, even that's not a punishment. He got so much money from the Cleveland Browns, he could settle with these women and give them whatever they want and still be fine. He wouldn't feel it. And if Deshaun is guilty of doing something wrong, that's kind of the ugliest part of all this. But there is no punishment. No punishment in the legal system. No punishment, potentially, in his job. And even if he is suspended a few games, In the end, he got out of this the largest contract in NFL. Think about that. Even if you're being – put yourself in that situation. Even if you didn't do something that somebody's accusing you of, if those accusations are out there, do you think that your company would give you a bigger – if you're, you know, if this is something that's in the spotlight, that you would get a pay raise after news like that? Because remember, Deshaun hadn't played. So he didn't play for a year. News of this comes out, and it leads to the biggest contract. And now if these women are telling the truth, I can understand why they would feel so terribly. Because he did those things to them in this hypothetical situation, right? Allegedly did some things to these massage therapists, and nothing's going to come from it. Not from the legal situation, right? Not financially. Even if he ends up having to pay these women, he's doing just fine. Not from his profession. He'll be in the NFL this year, got a huge contract. And that's all, of course, assuming that what these women are saying are true. That's why this is still such a tough situation, because we still don't really have much clarity or know exactly what transpired. But if you take these women at face value, you can understand why, you know, they see the news of that contract. And I'm sure it's incredibly crushing for somebody who may have gone through something like that. We'll see when the NFL finally makes a ruling on Deshaun and what that may look like. But I think the admission from his lawyer, which is really just nothing, it's not new information, it's kind of reiterating, we already kind of knew that, about consensual relationships. You know, I don't know if that's maybe the good look they were hoping it would be. And who am I to judge? But, you know, Deshaun's in a relationship, he's going out to get these massages for professional matters, that's what it leads to. Hey, everybody, everyone's got their things they're interested in. But I still don't think it's a great look. And the last thing I'll say, of course, is remember, for the NFL, it doesn't need to be a legal situation. They'll suspend you if you make them look bad, if you don't represent the league well. Ben Roethlisberger, a lot of guys, Ezekiel Elliott, right? They've been suspended. They did not get in trouble with the law. Adrian Peterson was suspended for a full year, didn't have any charges brought against him. But if you embarrass the league, right, they have it under the CBA. They can suspend you if you it's the player conduct policy, right? If you make the league look bad, if you don't carry yourself like they believe an NFL player should be carrying themselves, they'll punish you for it. So, again, even if there's no legal ramifications for Deshaun, just this whole thing, and maybe that admission is enough that Goodell looks at that or whoever he has put in charge, and they say, you know, this does not reflect well on our league, which it hasn't. And that could play into the suspension, whatever it may be. Speaking of quarterbacks, when we come back, I think Sam Darnold and Trevor Lawrence are very similar, and I think Justin Fields is the opposite, and I'll explain why when we come back. It's the Morning Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
So finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Can you hear me now?
We got you, friend.
All right. It's like the old phone commercials. Having to move to find service so you could hear somebody. Some issues. You know, I'm doing the show remotely. I'm in Greenville. Southern Conference Baseball Tournament going on. The great thing about radio is I don't even need to tell you if I don't want to. I could be doing the show from anywhere in the world. You wouldn't have any idea. But it's just, it's always a different show when you do things remotely. It's harder to have maybe guests on the air. It's even harder to just interact with Trent back in the studio when you're on the road to play sound. So it's always a different show. And sometimes it also comes with some technical issues. So anyways, appreciate you hanging with us this afternoon. We'll be back in studio next week. I'm in Greenville the rest of this week. We have Citadel Baseball tomorrow night. And it's always a... Now, if I'm being truthfully honest with you, I prefer being in the studio. You know, some people do their shows from home. I want to be there in the studio. I want to be able to see Trent. I want to be able to, you know what's going on. It is nice to be able to have the TV on. And, you know, I could theoretically do the show when I'm on the road. I could do it from my bed. And, you know, who knows? I could be stuffing my face. But it's always great to be back in studio. We will be next week when we won't have maybe some of the technical things we always work through when the show's on the road. Nonetheless, it's great to be able to do the show with you no matter where I am. And I'm in Greenville with the Citadel baseball team for the next couple of days. Hey, before we go, let me get to this quickly. I don't want to try to rush it, but we'll get to it before we go this afternoon to pay off this tease. I think Sam Darnold and Trevor Lawrence are in the same situation. I think they're very similar. I think they're almost the same. I think Justin Fields is the opposite. Now, let me explain quick. Sam Darnold had some audio yesterday. If we have some time here at the back end of this thing, I'll play it before we go. But Darnold had some he talked to the media yesterday, and it made the rounds where he said, I think I could still be a star. I could still be the franchise guy. I'm getting used to the new system, yada, yada, yada. Here's where I compare Sam Darnold to Trevor Lawrence. I talk so much on this show about fit, especially when it comes to young quarterbacks. Fit is so important. And I think both of those two quarterbacks are still waiting for the right fit. Now, for Trevor Lawrence, it's only been 1 year, no problem. Sam Darnold's been a few years. This is going on year number 5. But still, for Darnold, almost a different coordinator every year. He had Adam Gase, who was a disaster in New York. First, he had Todd Bowles, who was a defensive coach, was then fired after a year, and has not been a head coach since. Then he had Adam Gase, who was just a disaster and should not have been a head coach in New York. Right? Then he winds up now in Carolina. We don't know about Matt Rhule at the NFL level. And while he was first given Joe Brady, and we were very excited, he had never called plays solely on his own. He had never called plays in the NFL. What he did at LSU was great, but it was also an incredibly talented team. He also had a longtime offensive coordinator as his sidecar. Really, he was sitting sidecar to the longtime offensive coordinator at LSU. And he had never run an offense solely on his own or at the NFL level or without a Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Justin Jett, right, all these pieces. And it was a bit of a disaster last year with Sam Darnold. And there's a reason why Brady was quickly fired. Right, he's a young guy, maybe wasn't ready for that role yet. So Sam Darnold's still waiting. Now, is it going to be Ben McAdoo? I don't know. But I think McAdoo does have the better resume than a Brady or maybe even an Adam Gase. McAdoo, when he called plays in New York, did a pretty good job with Eli Manning. And he's worked with Aaron Rodgers. He's worked with some good quarterbacks. I don't know if McAdoo is going to be a perfect solution either. I may be complaining about him early in the season next year. May not take long. But I think that could be a better fit than Joe Brady was kind of learning on the job. Adam Gase was underqualified to be the head coach in New York, especially with a young quarterback. Todd Bowles, not great for a young quarterback. Defensive coach who hasn't had a head coaching job since. And for Trevor Lawrence, the reason why I put him and Darnold together is because Urban Meyer, right? Similar to Joe Brady last year. Urban Meyer was in over his head. Great football coach, but at the college level, not an NFL guy. And when you come into the league and it's your first year and you're already on a bad team, there's a reason why the Jaguars are still picking first again this year, because it's a bad roster. And you have a coach that doesn't really know what he's doing, that's a bad mix. And Trevor Lawrence did not look good as a rookie. But now you bring in Doug Peterson. He's won a Super Bowl. He's played the position at the NFL level. He's developed young quarterbacks like a Carson Wentz. Right? He worked a long time with Andy Reid. That's a much better resume. That seems like a much better fit for Trevor Lawrence. Ben McAdoo seems like a much better fit. Still maybe isn't perfect, but a better fit for Sam Darnold than Adam Gase or certainly Brady last year, who made it half a season. And fit is so important. So I put Darnold and Lawrence together that they're waiting for that right guy. I think Doug Peterson will be a big upgrade. Hopefully that helps Trevor Lawrence this year. I think McAdoo will even be an upgrade. Hopefully that helps Sam Darnold this year. And who knows, right? Maybe he will surprise us enough that he plays well. Maybe he keeps that job. Or maybe he becomes a starter elsewhere. Maybe he shows you, hey, I could still be a guy in this league. He's just been waiting for the right person to be paired with and to help him. Now on the flip side, quickly before we go, why I said Justin Fields is the opposite is because I think the Bears, I've been saying this all offseason, but when fit is so imperfect, important is the word I'm looking for. It's been a long day. When fit is so important, I think the Bears did a disservice to Justin Fields. Matt Nagy may not be a great coach, but at least he was an offensive mind. You replace him with a first-time head coach who's a defensive guy. You give him a first-time offensive coordinator, a coaching staff that has zero play-calling experience on staff. That's not good. Justin Fields is moving in the opposite direction. Trevor Lawrence at least got an upgrade. Sam Darnold, I do think, got an upgrade. And maybe that will help these guys. Maybe Lawrence will look a lot better in year two. Maybe Darnold will look like he belongs this year. And Justin Fields, meanwhile, I'm concerned about what he'll look like in year two with that staff. Plenty more to get to tomorrow on the show, as we'll still be up here with the Citadel baseball team. They'll play again tomorrow night in the conference tournament. We'll wrap up your week tomorrow on the show with plenty to do from the road. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.